Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
It is 9:09. Congratulations to Kristen Jones of Marrero and Chris Miller, not our Chris Miller, of Metairie. They're going to Jazz Fest just for listening to WWL. And you can, too, because in a couple of minutes, I'm going to announce the code word of the day. Then you go to WWL.com/contest, and you register to win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. It's that easy. And that's all. Happy festing from Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time in WWL. So that's coming up. But first, we're joined by Gary Korn, Director of Technology Law and Security Program and an Adjunct Professor of Cyber and National Security Law and the Law of Armed Conflict at American University. He spent 26 years on active duty in the U.S. Army as a military attorney practicing national security law at the highest levels within the Department of Defense. His final 5 years, he served as the Staff Judge Advocate General Counsel to U.S. Cyber Command. So he has certainly been there and done that. And I don't know if I should call you, what was your rank in the officer, Gary?
I retired as a colonel.
As a colonel. I'll call you colonel if that's all right, is it?
That's fine.
All right, colonel. Let's talk about, first of all, as an overview to this, I don't know how you sleep at night. You got to know things that we don't know. You have to know things that are going on that we'll never know, as it relates to cyber attacks, other countries attempting to hit the United States that have to keep you awake at night, yes?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true, and there are some things that, unfortunately, I cannot share with you.
No, I understand that. I get that fully.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just saying, in preparation for and looking at your experience and knowing I was going to talk to you, I was just thinking about it that I don't know how you sleep at night, knowing what you know.
Well, I mean, it's some days I'm more tired than others, so that's a practical reality.
Yeah.
But you
get
know,
to the gym, huh?
Yeah, get you to the gym. Yeah. It is. I think it's important for your audience to know. And this isn't hard to kind of track down. And but we are constantly engaged every day with adversarial threats in the cyber domain. You know, there's whether it's Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, non-state actors, criminal actors. It's just coming constantly every day. And it's been getting worse over time. And, you know, now we see actions that are directed against critical infrastructure in the U.S. You know, fortunately, to this point, nobody has actually sought to disrupt critical infrastructure, but they're positioning to be able to do so. And there's, you know, below that, there's certainly the constant theft of our intellectual property, of, you know, national secrets, et cetera, that's happening all the time. And we have to be engaged to counter and disrupt this stuff.
We're talking to Colonel Gary Korn about cybersecurity and so forth, about something that China alleged, but I just want to look at it. An overview first before we specifically get to that. One thing, Colonel, and you were in 26 years active U.S. Army, the thing that frightens me most about this is, unlike tanks and bombs and even drones and missiles, this doesn't really cost a lot to be terribly effective at cyber attacks, does it? Relatively speaking, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it is true that anybody with access to the internet can present a threat. Mm-hmm. And the technology is very democratized. I mean, to really have significant impact, I do think that you have to be a fairly sophisticated actor or be pretty, you know, more lucky. And so China has a lot of resources that they put against this. Russia has a lot of resources that they put against this. And, you know, actors of that vein. So, it's a broad-based threat. There's certainly a broad attack surface, as we are so digitally dependent and interconnected. So we have to be vigilant all the time. But, you know, there's certainly actors that have more capability to do harm than others.
Is it a function of equipment or just pure manpower and enough people to press enough keys? kind of like the old thing with a monkey and a typewriter.
You know, it's a combination of those things. You have to have the infrastructure to utilize. You have to have, you know, it's a technological environment. You have to have the technology. But ultimately, and as we say, in trying to build out our ability for cybersecurity, it is the people, right? And so you have to have talent. You know, there are some places that have a lot of access to talent and human capacity. So, you know, it's a function of all those things, but definitely it has to do with people at keyboards.
Are there nations ahead of others when it comes to training and recruiting talent at keyboards, as you say?
Well, I mean, you can look at, statements not too long ago from the former director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, that said, you know, even if he could array all of his cyber expertise and operators at the FBI against the problem set, China, brings more than 10 times that capacity. I'm paraphrasing here.
No, but I understand.
China has a very deep well of human capacity that they utilize in this space. So, yeah, I mean, there are some actors. Russia, not as much, but they're very sophisticated in what they do, or their capability set, their talents. They're a little bit more brute force a lot of times in the operations they conduct, but there's differences in approach.
Is the next the big war, that next big conflict, and as a terribly generalized statement, Colonel, I realize, but are you more concerned that that's going to be in cyberspace than it is on the battlefield? That's where we're headed?
I think cyber will certainly play a role. There's lots of looking back at what happened in 2022 when Russia escalated its efforts against Ukraine and invaded at a mass level. And there were efforts to use cyber in support of that. Some of those were successful, but they weren't as catastrophic as some had predicted. So, I think at the end of the day, war is war. The nature of war is a constant, and it will still involve a lot of physical force. But cyber will play a role. That is exactly why China, through what's been dubbed Vault Typhoon operations, as I was alluding to earlier, has sought to embed itself in our critical infrastructure. You can envision lots of scenarios where if God forbid, we got into conflict with China, they could disrupt our ability to deploy forces forward. They could bring down, portions of the energy grid and create chaos here domestically, et cetera. And those things will be integrated into any war in the future.
Who is it in the United States that's responsible for that? Is that shared with National Security, DOD? And do we have, in your opinion, is enough money, are enough resources being dedicated to protecting the United States from such a cyber attack?
Well, it is, national cybersecurity is a shared mission space. There are assets at the critical infrastructure and security agency there, and within DHS, there are assets in DOJ and the FBI that have their portions of the mission space. The National Security Agency plays its role from a signals intelligence perspective. And DOD has the U.S. Cyber Command, where I served for 5 years, that is built to defend the nation in cyberspace, focusing externally at our adversaries. So it is a team effort. We have been getting better and better over time and building out those teams and integrating and coordinating them. But I think that we are not properly resourced overall to meet the mission requirements.
Not adequately funded, and it starts with funding and goes from there?
Yeah, I mean, everything, you can't build out force structure. You can't acquire the kinds of technological infrastructure you need, et cetera, without funding. It all starts with the funding to drive resource development and capacity. So, but, that's for policymakers above my grade level to ultimately decide.
But you do it. They are advised by people like you. And I'm just wondering, do the people in Congress, as far as you know, generally speaking, get the importance of this?
It's interesting. I think this is one area, fortunately, over time where we've had a fair amount of bipartisan agreement. Okay. I think they do. And Congress has done a lot in the last, decade or so to provide both from an authorities perspective, a legal architecture, et cetera, and resourcing more support to the executive branch's mission requirements. But, whether that's right sized, again, that takes a deep analysis. And I think that, we don't have the full capacity we need to fully address this security problem set.
And will you know, or do you know, until it's too late? Because you might think you're ready, but then you're not, right?
Well, I mean, yes, that's unfortunately often the case. Mm-hmm. It takes a crisis to really galvanize energy and efforts and drive, broader changes. We saw that after September 11th, for example. You just hope is not a method, but you have to hope that, we have enough to stave off a real crisis, but then if a crisis comes, we have the resiliency and the depth and the ability to react quickly enough to mitigate the crisis.
I guess what I'm thinking, in conventional warfare, there are so many scenarios, like whether you want to look at the movies from the 1940s with the tabletop exercises or, the computer plotted scenarios. I just wonder, when it comes to cybersecurity, can you really anticipate everything? And I guess that's a self-answering question. You can't, but because you don't really know what the other side is up to, right? Or what they have, or how do you even go about anticipating what is possible when you don't know what's possible?
Well, I mean, that's as you know, that's true of, I think, any threat scenario in any domain. You say in the military, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And it's not the plan that matters. It's the fact that you've gone through the planning to position yourself as best you can and to have the flexibility to move off that plan. There's an aspect of what we do know. There's the need for deep intelligence. This is something that my former commander, boss, client, General Nakasone, was very focused on, and it's this notion of what was termed persistent engagement in cyberspace, so that at all levels, starting with the intelligence, we have a better sight picture of what our adversaries' capabilities are, what their intentions and plans are, and how they're maneuvering against us. But it is a very dynamic space, and we are in contact with our adversaries every day, so it's an evolving problem set.
Let me grab a break. I'm sorry, Colonel, finish your thought, please.
No, go ahead. You're fine.
No, I said we're going to grab a break here, and then we'll come back and talk about China. And somebody texted in, we always hear about others trying to hack us. Are we doing the same to them? We'll talk about an accusation from China when we come back. We're talking with Colonel Gary Korn, Director of the Technology Law and Security Program, an adjunct professor of cyber and national security law and the law of armed conflict at American University, 26 years on active duty in the U.S. Army as a military attorney practicing national security law at the highest levels with the Department of Defense. Final 5 years, he served as a staff judge advocate general counsel to U.S. Cyber Command. When we come back, we'll talk about the United States attacking, or do we launch attacks against other countries, and what's going on, and how do you handle actions or from against nation states or third-party actors? And I have a question about just when it comes to espionage, because you're giving people the keys to the kingdom. So how do you know who to trust and who not to trust? Because I don't know. This just keeps me awake at night chasing my tail. 923 back in a flash, WWL. All right, here's your Jazz Fest code word. It is culture, C-U-L-T-U-R-E. Go to WWL.com/contest, enter culture, register to win tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Good luck, happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. Quickly back to Colonel.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, Every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, draw deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, Gary Cohen, director of the Technology Law and Security Program, been in the military at American University, been in the military 26 years, and well-versed as it relates to cyber defense. Let's talk about somebody texting in, Colonel, and a Chinese accused the United States of a cyber attack. Is the United States attacking other countries as we attack them? I would think we're at least probing to see what they can do and what they can't do. Thoughts on that and the specific Chinese charge?
Well, first, I would not. I wouldn't put a lot of credence into Chinese allegations. And you know, part of this has to do with the meaning of the term cyber attack. It's used pretty broadly. Anything from just gaining access to an adversary system to actually causing harm or damage through that access. So I can't get into specifics of what the U.S. does or doesn't do, other than to say that, starting certainly back in 2018, we moved within the DOD to a much more proactive posture. I think in terms of probing to understand what our adversaries are doing and their capacity, it's everything that's been happening for some time. That's the standard business of intelligence. But in terms of disrupting adversary actions against us, we've been much more proactive in the last, 5, 6, 7 years. And there are some public reports of some of those operations that have happened. So, you also have to put this in the different mission sets of, at least within the DOD and Cyber Command. Some of this is supporting the traditional geographic combatant commands and their war plans. But part of it is the ongoing everyday defense of the nation in cyberspace. And again, that's where I say you have notions of defending forward and disrupting and countering cyber threats. And that is happening.
As I talk about probing and cyber threats coming from without, all you got to do is Google or put Chinese cranes in your search engine, and you'll see stories that come up every now and then about the number of Chinese cranes at ports that come from China that might have some kind of semiconductor chip. I don't know, Colonel, and I don't know what I'm talking about here. Bear with me here on this eighth grade level, but how concerned are you about Trojan horses and Chinese technology involved in the things that we rely on so heavily here, and things like ports and their ability to disrupt something like that where it's already there, and our ability to defend against something like that?
I'm very concerned. And this is an issue. We supply chains, where the technology is coming from, backdoor accesses that can be built into the firmware and software of different computers and chips, et cetera, that come from China. And this is, we've been dealing this for some time, pushing back on using Huawei infrastructure in the U.S., et cetera. And this is absolutely something that we have to be dealing with at an increased level. There are vulnerabilities in our system that come from supply chain compromises from technology coming out of China.
And not just cranes, iPhones, other things, computers?
Well, just to kind of take it down to a mundane level, I published a few articles some years back on this, but even commercial drones, DJI is one of the market leaders in selling small commercial drones. And it's, I would say, not uncoincidental that they had a program for a while where they were donating these drones to a lot of local law enforcement agencies, first responders, et cetera, And there were some studies showing that there were backdoors built into the controlling software, et cetera. So, you know, there's massive data collection, companies that have tethers back to China. There's lots of concerns about data flows back to China, the interrelationship between companies in China and the.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Communist Party and, you know, government leadership, et cetera. So across the spectrum of internet or digital technology, yes, it is a problem that we have to be very vigilant about.
Yeah, get me headed to the gym again, Colonel. That's nothing. Get me headed to the gym right there. When it comes to the distinguishing between criminal activities when it comes to hacking and bad actors, bad foreign countries hacking, like things like cryptocurrency, is it one and the same, or are the lines blurred there? Because if you affect a nation's economy, naturally you affect its right to defend himself or its ability to defend itself. Talk about that, if you will, please.
Sure. And, you know, yes, there is a distinction, but there's certainly overlaps, and the lines are blurred. Mm-hmm. And you can take the issue of ransomware, which has been a huge problem for years now, where an actor uses encryption malware technology to essentially extort a system owner to release data, release systems availability, et cetera. Well, you know, President Biden during his tenure declared that a national security problem. Generally, ransomware is done by criminal organizations. It is a criminal enterprise. But it's happening at such a level that it's becoming a national security problem. Not only that, but there's lots of evidence that North Korea uses ransomware operations through proxies and otherwise to generate currency to support its nuclear weapons development program. You know, it has a very difficult time generating hard currency otherwise, and it's using criminal activity to support its foreign policy and national, you know, defense goals. So there is a blurring. Ultimately, it really just has to do with who has primacy in dealing with a given penetration or problem set, whether that's the FBI as a lead, what role does DOD have to play in a given situation. And each of those, honestly, will just depend. And it goes back to that team approach that I talked about earlier, and coordinating and synchronizing across all the players that we have in the national security space.
Colonel, I used to love dystopian movies and apocalyptic movies and so forth. Not so much in the last couple of years, because so much of it seems like, you know, maybe we're not that far away from it. When we see things depicted like, you know, I forgot the movie that I saw on Netflix with Julia Roberts, where they shut down communications and then we turn on ourselves, or other movies along those lines. Are any of those things accurate at all? I don't know if you've seen any of them or not.
Well, I think
Leave the World Behind is one of them, I think, is what Tim tells me.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And, you know, if you go back to the days of Star Trek, when I'll date myself, but when I was a kid, you know, some of the things that we thought were whiz-bang technologies, you know, handheld communicators and stuff.
Dick Tracy.
We all have cell phones in our pockets every day now. So science fiction oftentimes kind of is prescient in what's coming down the road. But I think it would be difficult to have an absolutely catastrophic blow against the United States. I think you could have significant harm done if it's done, you know, with coordination against certain systems. But one of the benefits we also have is that there's a lot of, you know, separation and distinction between a lot of the critical infrastructure that we rely on. And so, you know, some might go down, but others will not. And I think we are realizing more and more we have to have resiliency built in to these systems. A great example was in Ukraine where, you know, Russia impacted energy production. They hit power generation plants. And in some of those instances, the Ukrainians, they were able to just revert back to their old analog systems very quickly to get energy back up and running. So you have to have resiliency built into these systems to be able to absorb any blows.
Comes back to pulling a rope, getting the engine going, huh, Colonel?
Yeah, I mean, at some level. Can't forget those skills.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time, and I hope you'll come back to talk about this some more with us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. It's just everything. Gary Korn, Director of the Technology Law and Security Program and Adjunct Professor of Cyber and National Security Law and the Law of Armed Conflict at American University. I'm getting some texts from people saying, yeah, well, the U.S. does it, too. I hope the U.S. does it, too. I hope the U.S. is constantly probing, and I hope that we're right on a par with any of the other nations. And you know, you got to realize it's this thing, I would think, changes by the second in terms of who's got the advantage over whom, if not minute. 9:40, we'll talk to Mike Pearlstein. We come back, WWL-TV investigator, about a teen escaping juvenile jail and terrorizing a New Orleans woman. Right now, it's time for traffic on WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to Mike Pearlstein, WWL-TV investigative reporter. Decisions and actions have consequences, and man, when it comes to restoring juveniles, that's what we're talking about. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm fine.
You're the reporter. You tell me the story, my friend. I'm going to sit back and listen and ask you if I have any questions.
Well, the one thing that most people may know about if they have followed the news was an escape from the juvenile justice jail, otherwise known as Juvenile Justice Intervention Center, back in September, in which a 17-year-old named Carlos Taylor fled out of a courtroom, unshackled, no handcuffs, through a couple of unlocked doors, hopped a fence, and is now accused of carjacking a 72-year-old woman, 73 now, in that parking lot of the LSU Dental School nearby. So it was a really, high-profile breach. There was a press conference. There was an all-points bulletin, a manhunt that expanded throughout South Louisiana before they finally captured Carlos Taylor in Baton Rouge. He is now facing all kinds of additional charges, not just the carjacking, the charge that had him in juvenile court in the first place being transferred to adult court on attempt murder, but now he's accused of being part of a, you know, criminal gang with a whole host of charges. So what was not known at the time of that escape and carjacking was that there was an almost identical escape, didn't get very far, I'm calling it an escape attempt, back in January. And that led to all kinds of finger-pointing, blame, proposed remedies to basically secure these gaps, these security lapses, and all of the acrimony didn't allow that to happen. And the most, I guess the most simple solution would have been a lock on a door that leads from the court to the jail, to a corridor that leads to the jail. And it never happened until Carlos Taylor, at that point, the director of the JJIC, Deshaun Williams, said despite the judge's misgivings about a lock, which the judges say would have posed a risk to them in case of emergency like a fire, said, nope, I cannot risk another escape. We've had two now, one that the public knew about with Carlos Taylor, but the other, which I uncovered back in January, almost identical. So it really was a story of a missed opportunity. And it really, the consequences were bad enough. We spoke exclusively to Barbara Lane, the 70, you know, plus year old, longtime New Orleans entertainer, who, while she was not hurt, her car was wrecked, her belongings stolen, music, sheets of music that she had for decades, all gone because of this incident. So a real cautionary tale that fortunately we were able to get a hold of a whole string of documents, emails, and letters back and forth between the judges and the jail over these security lapses.
And there's also a question about restraints, right?
Yeah, so the restraints, and it had us digging deep into the children's code where there's a special set of laws for juveniles, obviously because of their age are handled differently than adults in the criminal justice system. But at the time of the January escape, Dashiell Williams, head of the jail, she basically put out a policy that we are bringing the juveniles to court in handcuffs and shackles from now on. We cannot risk this type of escape. And some of the judges pushed back. It was allowed for a while, but eventually a defense attorney filed a motion. It went all the way up to the state Supreme Court, pointing out in the children's code, you can't have juveniles in handcuffs and shackles in the court itself. Now, you can bring them there in the handcuffs. You can put them on as they go back to be transported to jail. But I guess for the, you know, treating children differently than adults, the handcuffs and shackles come off. And you can see that in, you know, those court hearings where there might be a parent or guardian to see a kid in handcuffs, and for the kid to be in handcuffs could be traumatizing and actually work against a rehabilitation. However, there's a little kind of sub rule embedded within that law that you can keep the handcuffs and shackles on if you make a motion to the judge on each individual defendant that this kid is a flight risk or a danger. And that was viewed by the jail and the DA's office as just too cumbersome. You know, these are kind of fluid hearings. Sometimes it takes hours, you know, to bring a kid into a court. The dockets are not timed that precisely. So to come with a motion for each individual kid that you think is a danger was viewed as just not viable. And another argument from the jail was, of all of the juveniles who are arrested, most do get returned home to parent or guardian. And it's just the ones in the most serious crimes, almost all violent crimes, are the ones who are detained. And their argument was, look, the ones who are detained, who are sitting here in our lockup, are already the ones who are a danger, flight risk, and should be in shackles. Well, the court ultimately rejected that. And that then led to the second issue, which was a really simple one. It was about a $25 fix to put a lock on a particular door that leads from court into the corridor that ultimately leads to the jail. And on that one, the jail prevailed. They put that lock on there and said, I'm not putting the public at risk. It's going to stay. The judges objected, but they ended up having a master, I guess, key that the judges and the courts now have. So hopefully that solves this once and for all. But this was the kind of things that go on in juvenile court outside of the public eye because of all of the confidentiality attached to juveniles in our court system.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the time and the story. 9:53, we'll take a break, find out what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.